Okay, well, here we go. You know what I'm going to say. So get your Bibles ready and turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It's actually kind of in the middle of a story, but at least at this point, we're going to see the Torah portion name is the name of the individual about which the story is about. Verse 10 is where we're going to go, of chapter 25 of the book of Numbers, or Bamidbar. And as we went out of last week's portion, we saw that what was happening was there had been a problem. And the problem was that somehow or another, and it turns out, as we're going to find, it's Bilaam who did the Clintonian thing, right? He said, you can't curse them, but you can get them to curse themselves. So he figured out a way to do that, and they got the Midianite women to go down and basically seduce the men and get them, bowing down before Baal. So Moses had all the judges slay the men who had bowed themselves down. But it turns out things weren't done yet. The plague was not stayed. And one of the men of Israel, in the sight of Moses and an entire camp, as it turns out, brought a woman into his tent and started doing the dirty deed right there in front of everybody. So Yahuwah spoke with Moshe, and he said, after Pinhas went into the tent and ran a spear through both of them. Yeah. So Pinhas committed, not premeditated, but I guess you could say hot-blooded murder. No, he was actually acting, as it turns out, in service of the Most High, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. And as a result, the portion that we begin with this week says, verse 10, Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, Pinhas, that fellow, son of Eleazar, son of Aaron the priest, has turned my wrath away from the B'nai Israel, in that he was very zealous, that word there is kana, for my sake among them, so that I did not consume the children of Israel in my own jealousy. So therefore I say, behold, I give unto him my covenant of shalom, or peace. Now, interesting, here's another one of those places where we see what are called the jots and tittles, or the yods and tittles, in the scripture. These are scribal notations, and it's kind of fascinating. The word shalom sometimes is spelled with a vav, where the O sound comes from, shalom, usually. But in this case, it is called the broken vav. The vav literally is written with a split in the stem. And, of course, it's interesting. There are those that will point out that vav is... When you look at the Hebrew numbering scheme, Vav represents the number 6. And, of course, we recognize from numbers in Scripture and some of the standard usages, 6 is one short of perfection. 6 is, a.k.a., the number of man, right? 666, the number of the particular man, that is the so-called Antichrist, the servant of the adversary. But this idea that the 6 represents a man, and the vav therefore represents a man, some also note the vav looks like a nail, and in this case it is a broken 6, so maybe it's a broken man. The covenant of peace. Interesting. Right, so continuing the quote though, Pinchas is going to get my covenant of peace, says Yah. It'll be unto him and to his seed after him the covenant of an everlasting priesthood. Because he was zealous, he was kana for his Elohim, and he made atonement for the B'nai Israel. So this is a big deal. He made atonement for the B'nai Israel, and he is rewarded with the everlasting priesthood. Now it says, the name of the man of Israel who was slain with the Midianitish woman, his name was Zimri, son of Salu, a prince of the father's house among the Shimeonites. The name of the Midianitish woman who was slain was Cozbi, daughter of Zur. He was head of the people of the father's house in Midian. So these were both high-profile folks. Yahuwah then spoke to Moshe, and he said, harass the Midianites and smite them. Now, this is an interesting word. The word there is Zoror, and it's rendered as harass the Midianites in this place. And interestingly, in Leviticus 18:18, it's also used, and this is the place where it says a man, while he is allowed to take more than one wife, is not supposed to take sisters. Well, wait a minute. It doesn't say he can't take sisters in general. It says he cannot take sisters for this very same reason, to harass, to vex, to Zeror them. So it's the same word. It's kind of interesting. So this word that is used to say a man can't take a wife and his sister in order to vex her or harass her is the same term that is used against a people whom Yah has a real problem with. So I guess what this does is gives us an indication of just how severe this word harass is. It's not just vex them. It's not just, make them a little bit feel put out and not welcome. No, harass means this is something serious. You're going to do more than just make them wish they hadn't done that. So harass the Midianites and smite them. Smite them, that means kill them, right? So this is serious. Because they harass you, same word, Zoror, Zororim, by their wiles, wherewith they have beguiled you in the matter of Peor. And in the manner of Cozbi, the daughter of the prince of Midian, their sister, who was slain on the day of the plague in the matter of Peor. So this is serious, and it's fascinating to see how some of the same words are used in different ways, and it gives us a little bit better indication of the depth of meaning that is intended here. So this is serious, what Yah wants done to the Midianites for this reason. All right, so it came to pass, it says, this is in Acts chapter 26, after that plague, that Yahuwah spoke to Moshe and unto Eleazar, son of Aaron, the priest, and he said, take the sum. Oh, here it is again. This is literally lift up at Rosh, lift up the head, make a head count of all of the congregation of Bnei Israel. Now, we know that this happened before. As a matter of fact, in this same book, it begins with the first head count. This is years later. We're going to make another head count. So again, it's the children of Israel from 20 years old and upward by their father's houses, all that are able to go forth to war in Israel. Same basic parameters as the previous head count. And Moshe and Eleazar the priest, remember before it was Aaron, but this is a long time after that. He's now passed. They spoke with them in the plains of Moab in the at Jericho by the Jordan. And they said, take the sum of the people, 20 years old and up, as Yahuwah commanded Moshe and the Bnei Israel that came forth out of the land of Mitzrayim. Okay, so Reuben, now we're going to get the numbers. We don't have much more detail, just here we go. And I won't read through all of them. Of course, there's going to be the 12 tribes, all of those that are able to go to war. Does not count the Levites for the same obvious reason. And begins with Reuben. Now, the text is going to be similar, but not identical in every case. And that is a little bit different than the first time around. But it's also, I think, as always, when we see differences in the text and things aren't identical, that gives us a clue, too. All right, Reuben, firstborn of Israel. The sons of Reuben, and here we are, the listing. Hanok, Palu, and each time it says Hanok, the family of the Hanokites, Palu, the Paluites, Hezron, the family of the Hezronites, and Carmi, the family of the Carmites. So we got four sons of Reuben. These are the families of the Reubenites. They that were numbered of them were 43,730. Sons of Palu, Eliab, and Eliab had sons, Nemuel, Dathan, Abiram. These are the same Dathan and Abiram, we're told. So here's where we see one of those differences. The elect of the congregation, remember what happened to them? Not so good. They strove against Moshe and against Aaron in the company of Korah when they strove against Yahuwah, and they were swallowed up. The earth opened her mouth, swallowed them up together with Korah, and that company died when that fire devoured 250 men, and they became an oat, a sign, you could say a warning. Notwithstanding, not all of the sons of Korah died. He had survivors. Sons of Simeon, after their families, and here we're going to get their names, Nemuel and Yamin and Zerah and Shaul. Families of the Simeonites, 22,200. Now, this one is interesting because we're going to, when we're done here, be able to compare the numbers, see whether Israel's gotten bigger or smaller or stayed about the same. It's been decades now, four decades in the wilderness. And notice, Simeon is one of the biggest decliners. Simeon, first time around, was 59,300. Now, they've declined to less than half of that, 22,200. Sons of Gad, after their families, and their sons, Zephon, Haggai, and Shuni, and Uzni, and family of the Aradites, Areli, and the Aralites. These are the families of the sons of Gad. Of those that were numbered of Gad, 40,500. Then, remember, we're going to get a listing of the sons of Judah, although, of course, some of them didn't make it this far. Aaron, Onan, they both died in the land of Canaan. Sons of Judah, there was Shelah, And his family, Perez, and the sons of Perez, Hezron, Hamul, and the families of Judah, when they were all numbered, were 76,500. That's one of the bigger ones. Of Issachar, after their families, we have Tola and Puva, Yashub, Shimron. Their families, families of Issachar, those were numbered 64,300. Zebulun, their families, Zered, and Elon, and Yalil. And their sons, of course, when they're all counted up, those that were numbered of the Zebulunites were 60,500. Now, how about Joseph? Well, Joseph, of course, have two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And we're going to get a separate listing for those. Sons of Manasseh were Machir, and he had Gilead and the Gileadites. Sons of Gilead were Jezer and the Jezerites, Helek, and the Helekites, and of Azriel and Shechem. Oh, remember that name. Okay. Family of the Shechemites. And of, but it's a different Shechem, I'm sure. And of Shemida, the family of the Shemidites, and of Hefer. So lots of sons there. And then we're going to find out one other thing. Now, this is one of those other differences where we're not seeing just the sons named, but it says, Zelophehad, the son of Hefer, this last one that was named, he had no sons. Now, notice we have not had any daughters listed prior to this at all, even though you know that there were daughters in the group, right? Have to been. But, in fact, in this case, Hefer had no sons. He only had daughters. Names of the daughters of Zelophehad, they were Mala, Noach. It's actually Noah in this case, not Noach as it is with the fellow who built the ark. Noah, Hogla, Milcah, and Tirzah. So we have Zelophehad had no sons but daughters, and their names again were Mala, Noah, not to be confused with Noach, Hogla, Milcah, and Tirzah. The families of Manasseh, these were the number of them, were 52,700. These are the sons of Ephraim and their families, again the names of the sons of Ephraim: Shuthela, and Becher, and Tahan. And the sons of Shuhela, Aaron, and when they're all counted up, the families of Ephraim, according to their numbering, was 32,500. So, when you combine the two, Joseph's sons end up being huge, and literally about, 88,300, if I'm doing the math right. It doesn't tell us explicitly in the text, but if you add those two up, it's well over 85,000 total. Sons of Benjamin, after their families, Bela, Ashbel, and Ahiram, and Shephufam, and Hufam. And the sons of Bela were Ard and Naaman. And when they're all added up, the sons of Benjamin and their families, they that were numbered, 45,600. Dan, and he had sons Shuham. And when they're all added up, the number was 64,400. Asher had sons, including Imnah, Ishvi, and Beriah. And Beriah had a son, Heber, of the Heberites, and Malkiel. And then, this is interesting. For some reason, and I have not seen an explanation of this, I'm sure there's probably a midrash somewhere, because the only daughters that we see named in here are those that the father, Zelophehad, had no other sons. And they're going to appear in this very Torah portion as part of the story. And the point is clear. There is a real issue with inheritance that is going to be fleshed out in this Torah portion. But it says here, this name of the daughter of Asher was Sarah. And it is Sarach, actually, in the Hebrew. These are the families of the sons of Asher, according to those numbered them, 53,400. Naphtali. He had Yazreel, Guni, and Yezer, and Shillem. And when they're all numbered up, the total is 45,400. So, that's the last of the 12. These, it says then, are they that were numbered, counted, of the B'nai Israel. Total, drum roll, right? 601,730. That was 603,550. So we've lost just shy of about 2,000 people over the 40 years. Now, we know, too, that every single man, save the two, and at this point, Moshe is still alive, but all the rest are gone. So by the time they enter the land, what we're going to see is all of the men of Israel over the age 20, except for those two, have passed. And the result, we've got about a little less than 2,000 fewer men able to go to battle than we had 40 years prior. Now it says, Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, unto these the land shall be divided for an inheritance according to the number of names. So this is going to be the census that will determine the distribution by lot of the various parcels, who gets more, who gets less, based on the size of the families. To the more you shall give more inheritance, to the fewer you'll give less inheritance, to each one according to those that were numbered of it shall its inheritance be given. So the biggest tribes, meaning the sons of Joseph, are going to get the biggest inheritance, then Judah, and on down. Notwithstanding, the land shall be divided by lot, according to the number and the names of the tribes of their fathers they shall inherit. According to the lot shall their inheritance be divided between the more and the fewer. So the lot essentially is going to determine where the land is going to be, and then the size of those parcels by the numbers of folks. These are they that were numbered of the Levites after their families. Okay, so we've been talking about the men able to go to war. Now we're going to see the Levites. Gershon, Kohath, the family of the Kohathites, Merari, the Merariites. These are the names of the families of Levi, family of the Libnites, of the Hebronites, the family of the Malites, the family of the Mushites, and the family of the Korites. And Korahites. Kohath begot Amram. The name of Amram's wife, why are we doing this? Oh, it's going to be real clear if it's not obvious already. The name of Amram's wife was Jochebed, the daughter of Levi, who was born to Levi in Egypt, and she bore unto Amram, oh yes, now we remember, right, Aaron and Moshe, and Miriam, their sister. Unto Aaron were born Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. And of course, as we recall, Nadab and Abihu died when they offered strange fire before Yahuwah. They that were numbered of them, of the Levites, were 23,000, a male, from a month old and upward. So because this is not about going to war, we're going to number them from a month old, once they're past the time of infant mortality. Because they were not numbered among the Bnei Israel, because there was no inheritance given to them among the children of Israel. These then are they that were numbered by Moshe and Eleazar the priest, who numbered the children of Israel in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho. But among those, there was not a man of them that was numbered by Moshe and Aaron the priest, who numbered the children of Israel back when they were in the wilderness of Sinai. For Yahuwah had said of them and to them, basically, you shall surely die in the wilderness. So there was not left a man among them except, of course, Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, son of Nun, or Yeshua. It says, now, okay, we talked about this. Those were the daughters that were named. Then drew near the daughters of Zelophehad, son of Hepher, son of Gilead, son of Machir, son of Manasseh, of the families of Manasseh, in turn the son of Joseph. And these are their names, the daughters, Mala, Noah, and Hoglah, Milcah, and Tirzah. So five daughters. They stood before Moshe, before Eleazar the priest, and before the princes, and all of the congregation at the door of the tent of meeting. And they said the following, our father died in the wilderness, and he was not among the company of them that gathered themselves together against Yahuwah, along with Korah, but he died in his own sin, so we're not excusing him, but he had no sons. So why should the name of our father be done away with from among his family, because he had no son? Give us a possession among the brethren of our father. So Moshe brought their cause before Yahuwah, and Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and here's what he said. The daughters of Zelophehad speak rightly. You shall surely give them possession of an inheritance among their father's brethren, and you shall cause the inheritance of their father to pass unto them. So their father will get an inheritance, and you'll speak to the Bnei Israel and say the following. So here is the precedent, basically, for how it's going to be handled when similar situations arise in the future. If a man dies and he has no son, then you shall cause his inheritance to pass unto his daughter. If he has no daughter, then you give his inheritance to his brothers. And if he has no brothers, then you give his inheritance unto his father's brothers. Now, notice the pattern here. If he has no sons himself, the daughters get them. But on the other hand, if he has no daughters, then the inheritance goes through the line of his brothers and then his father's brothers. If his father has no brothers, you give his inheritance unto his kinsman that is next to him in the family, and he shall possess it. And it shall be unto the children of Israel a statute of judgment, as Yahuwah commanded Moshe. So, at this point, Yahuwah said unto Moshe, get yourself up into the mountain of Abarim, and behold the land. So you're going to get a chance to look at it. That's it, though. Behold the land which I have given to the men of Israel. And when you've seen it, you too shall be gathered unto your people, just as Aaron your brother was gathered. Because you rebelled against my commandment in the wilderness of Zin, Bamidbar Zin, in the strife of the congregation, to sanctify me at the waters before their eyes. These are the waters, of course, of Meribah Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin. And Moshe spoke unto Yahuwah, and he said, let Yahuwah, the Elohim of the spirits of all flesh, set a man over this congregation, who may go out before them, and who may come in before them, and who may lead them out, and who may bring them in, that the congregation of Yahuwah be not as sheep which have no shepherd. Now, the Midrash, and I don't know if I buy this, is suggesting that this is Moshe asking for one of his sons to be given the reward. I don't know that that is the case. I have a suspicion that Moshe probably already does know who is going to lead them. And then Yahuwah said unto Moshe, take Joshua, yeah, take Yeshua, son of Nun, a man in whom not will be spirit, but is Ruach. Lay your hand upon him. So he already has the Ruach. Lay your hand upon him. Set him before Eleazar the priest and before all the congregation and give him a charge in their sight. So this is going to be done publicly so that everybody knows Joshua is the new guy. You shall put of your honor upon him that all the congregation of the Bnei Israel may hearken. They're going to have to listen to him from here on. He shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who will inquire for him by the judgment of the Urim before Yahuwah. So these are the stones that basically will give a response to important questions. At his word they shall go out, and at his word they shall come in, both he and all the Bnei Israel with him, even all of the congregation. Kol Ha'edah. So Moshe did as Yahuwah commanded him. He took Joshua, set him before Eleazar the priest, before all the congregation, and he laid hands upon him, gave him a charge, as Yahuwah spoke by the hand of Moshe. And the last chapter in the Torah portion, let's see, I think it's the last chapter. Nope, we actually got a little bit more. This is a relatively long one this evening. This one says, Yahuwah then spoke to Moshe, and he said, command the Bnei Israel, and say to them, my food, which is presented to me for offerings made by fire of a sweet savor, you shall observe to offer in its due season. Here's what you'll say. This is the offering made by fire which you shall bring unto Yahuwah. He lambs of the first year without blemish. So this is going to describe what we refer to as the morning and the evening lamb. Two, day by day, for a continual burnt offering. One lamb you'll offer in the morning. Other lamb you offer at dusk. Tenth part of an ephah of fine flour for a meal offering, mingled with a fourth part of a hin of beaten oil. This is continual. It's a burnt offering, an olah, offered in Mount Sinai for a sweet savor, an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. The drink offering is one-fourth part of a hin for one lamb. In the holy place, you pour out that drink offering of strong drink unto Yahuwah. The other lamb you present at dusk, as the meal offering in the morning and as the drink offering thereof, you shall present it, an offering made by fire, a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. And on the Sabbath day, two he lambs of the first year without blemish, two tenths part of an ephah of fine flour for meal offering mingled with oil, and the drink offering thereof. This is the burnt offering for every Shabbat, Sabbath, besides the continual burnt offering and the drink offering thereof. So it's going to be made clear throughout here. These are additional offerings. Those two lambs, morning and evening, are offered every single day. In your new moons, your Rosh Chodesh, you shall present a burnt offering unto Yahuwah, two young bullocks and one ram, seven he-lambs of the first year without blemish. So the new moon, lots of sacrifices, three-tenths part of an ephah of fine flour for a meal offering, mingled with oil for each bullock, two-tenths part of fine flour for a meal offering, mingled with oil for one ram, and a several-tenth part of fine flour mingled with oil for a meal offering for every lamb. Burnt offering, sweet savor, an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. Their drink offerings, half a hin of wine for a bullock, a third part of a hin for the ram, a fourth part of a hin for the lamb. This, it says, is the burnt offering, again, the olah, of every new moon throughout the months of the year. And one he-goat for a sin offering, a chatat, unto Yahuwah, it'll be offered in addition to, beside, the continual burnt offering and the drink offering. And in the first month, on the 14th day of the month, is what? The Passover, Pesach, Le Yahuwah. And on the 15th day of this month, there'll be a feast, 7 days, unleavened bread. It's the Feast of Unleavened Bread. First day, holy convocation, you do no manner of servile work, but you shall present an offering made by fire, a burnt offering, unto Yahuwah. 2 young bulls, 1 ram, 7 he-lambs of the first year, they will be unto you without blemish. Their meal offering, fine flour mingled with oil, 3/10 part for a bull, 2/10 for a ram, and a several tenths part for every lamb out of the 7. And 1 he-goat for a sin offering to make atonement for you. You shall offer these besides, or in addition to, the burnt offering in the morning, which is a continual burnt offering. And in this manner you shall offer daily, for 7 days, the food of the offering made by fire, a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. It's offered beside the continual burnt offering and the drink offering thereof. So this is an additional offering. 7th day, another holy convocation, you'll do no manner of servile work. Also, in the day of first fruits, so this is the final of these spring, the one after that, that follows during that week. When you bring a meal offering unto Yahuwah in your feast of weeks, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no manner of servile work. Present a burnt offering for a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. 2 young bullocks, 1 ram, 7 he-lambs of the first year, their meal offering, fine flour, 3/10 part for each bullock, 2/10 for each ram, and a several tenth for every lamb of the 7. 1 he-goat to make atonement for you. Besides the continual burnt offering and the meal offering you shall offer them, they are without blemish, and their drink offerings. So we have a listing of all of the spring feasts through the end of the Feast of Weeks. And then it says, this is where there's a chapter break, but it really doesn't change title or subject. In the 7th month, all right, that means we're at the fall feast, right? On the first day of the month, so that would be the day that the new moon is sighted nominally, and there's obviously some people that have a difference of opinion on that score, but regardless, 7th month, first day, however we find out, you shall have a holy convocation. Do no manner of servile work. It is a day of blowing the horn unto you. So this is the time of Yom Teruah, or the Feast of Shouting, or the day of the Teruah. You shall prepare a burnt offering for a sweet savor unto Yahuwah, 1 young bull, 1 ram, 7 he-lambs of the first year without blemish. 7 he-lambs. And their meal offering, fine flour mingled with oil, 3/10 part for a bull, 2/10 for the ram, 1/10 part for every lamb of the 7. 1 he-goat for a chatat to make atonement for you. And that's in addition to the burnt offering of the new moon, right? So we get double on this new moon. And the meal offering thereof, the continual burnt offering and meal offerings or drink offerings according to their ordinance for a sweet savor, an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. And on the 10th day of this month, all right, let's see, pause. 10th day, all right, this would be the time of Yom Kippur, right, the Day of Atonement. You'll have a holy convocation. You shall do no manner of work, none whatsoever. And it says here, you shall afflict your nefshim, your souls. So this is the highest of the holy days. But you shall present a burnt offering unto Yahuwah for a sweet savor. 1 young bull, 1 ram, 7 he-lambs of the first year, they shall be unto you without blemish. Their meal offering, fine flour mingled with oil, 3/10 part for the bull, 2/10 for the ram, several tenth part for every one of the 7 lambs. A he-goat for a chatat, sin offering, besides that of atonement, and the continual burnt offering, so this is all in addition to, and the meal offerings and their drink offerings. And on the 15th day of the month, so this would be now the final of the set of the 3 fall feasts. This is the time of Sukkot we're talking about, and it's a week long. On the 15th day of the month, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no manner of servile work. You shall keep a feast unto Yahuwah for 7 days. And you shall present a burnt offering, an offering made by fire, a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. All right, this is a biggie. This is, as some of my friends have said, this is the big barbecue of the year. Almost like a wedding feast. A whole lot of meat on the grill. You shall present a burnt offering, an offering made by fire of a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. 13 young bullocks, 2 rams, 14 he-lambs of the first year, they shall be without blemish, and their meal offering, fine flour mingled with oil, 3/10 part for every bull of the 13, 2/10 for every ram of the 2, and several tenths part for every lamb of the 14 lambs. 1 he-goat for a chatat, besides the continual burnt offering, the meal offering, and the drink offering. All right, so that's day 1. Now, that's the day of the holy convocation, no servile work. But remember, the feast goes on for 7 days. These other ones are not considered to be, if you will, Sabbath days, high holy days, or days of no servile work. But we are going to offer an offering. And here we go. On the second day, you shall present 12 young bullocks, 2 rams, 14 he lambs of the first year without blemish, and their meal offering and drink offerings, and the rams and the bulls, according to their number, after the ordinance, and 1 he goat for a chatat. And that's in addition, of course, to the continual burnt offering, the meal offering, the drink offerings. We're going to see that there is a description for every one of the 7 days of the feast. The third day, 11 bullocks, 2 rams, 14 he lambs of the first year without blemish. Okay. Their meal offering, drink offerings for the bulls, the rams, and the lambs, according to their number after the ordinance. 1 he goat for a chatat, besides the continual burnt offering and the meal offering and the drink offering. Notice that the text here, again, is going to be almost identical with one difference. It's going to be for each of the days. So on the fourth day, 10 bullocks, 2 rams, 14 he lambs of the first year without blemish, meal offering, drink offerings for the bulls, the rams, the lambs, according to their number after the ordinance, 1 he goat for a sin offering, in addition to the regular stuff. All right. Is there a pattern here? Yeah, there is, and I'll cut to the chase. Fifth day, we're at 9 bullocks, 2 rams, 14 he lambs. So if you go through the entire list, and we see that on the seventh day, we now have 7 rams. 7 bullocks, rather, 2 rams, 14 he lambs of the first year without blemish. And, of course, the meal offerings and the drink offerings for all of the rams, the lambs, and the bulls. So, what we have is the following. Now, this is kind of interesting. I honestly suspect one of these days we'll probably find out the significance. But I'm not sure what it is, but the pattern is clear. If you add up the day of the feast plus the number of bulls, it always adds up to 14. In other words, the bulls start out on the first day, and they count down to the point where at the end we have the seventh day, and we have 7 bullocks. So you add them up, they add up to 14. Whereas the number of lambs is always, the he lambs of the first year without blemish, is always 14 each day, as are the others. On the eighth day, it says, you shall have a solemn assembly, you shall do no manner of servile work, but... Now we're going to present a burnt offering, an offering made by fire of a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. 1 bull, 1 ram, 7 he lambs of the first year without blemish, along with their meal offerings, their drink offering for the bull, the ram, and the lambs, according to their number, after the ordinance. And 1 he goat for a chatat, besides the continual burnt offering, that happens every day again, and the meal offering and the drink offering thereof. These, it says, you shall offer unto Yahuwah in your appointed seasons. This is in addition to or beside your vows and your other free will offerings, whether they be your burnt offerings or your meal offerings or your drink offerings or your shalamim or your peace offerings. So basically, the chapter ends with the description of these are the things you'll offer to Yahuwah in your appointed seasons, in addition to your other vows, free will offerings, burnt offerings, meal offerings, drink offerings, and shalamim and peace offerings. So we get another recap with a bit more detail about the specifics of the offerings for each of the appointed times or moedim of Yah. Now that ends the chapter that's number 29, but it doesn't end officially the Torah portion. There's one more verse here. And of course this verse is it sounds like a throwaway line, but it's not. And I always like to point out that whenever Moshe is told something, it says this is what he did. So it says, Moshe told the B'nai Israel according to all that Yahuwah commanded Moshe.